Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Hi, this is Rick Reynolds, and I want to welcome you tonight to Affair Recovery Radio, and I've got my sweet wife, Stephanie, here, and our producer, George, who is absolutely the best producer in the entire world. He can do more good stuff than anybody else that has ever been involved in Radio Land. And besides that, he's an amazing man, besides being a good producer. So everybody say hi to George. Hello, George. So tonight, we really wanted to talk a little bit about the report that we put out this past week called The Shocking Truth About Trust. And if anybody has ever had an issue with trust, I sure hope that you will go to our website at harboringhope.com. We've actually got several websites, but harboringhope.com, and it's or you can also go to affairrecovery.com and you can sign up there. But harboringhope.com, you can get The Shocking Truth About Trust. And the nice thing about this particular PDF report is it actually gives very specific steps for both the hurt spouse and for the unfaithful spouse of ways they can begin to strengthen a relationship and come back together again. I know Stephanie's actually been talking to somebody this past week that's having a little bit of trouble with trust at this point.
Can people call us and ask us questions, Rick?
Why don't you? That was really a leading question. That was
we
good,
have
honey.
A phone number. It's 637-9673. It's area code 512. 512-637-9673, and call us with any questions that you have about anything to do with infidelity or marriage. In particular tonight, since we're addressing the issue of trust, you could call and let us know how you dealt with regaining trust in your relationship if there was some unfaithfulness. What worked for you? What didn't work for you? We'd love to hear from you. So just keep that number in mind.
And also, if you go to harboringhope.com, because and the reason we're doing all of this, we're actually releasing the Harboring Hope course in about 2.5 weeks now, and we're extremely excited about this new product.
What is this new product, Rick?
This new product is actually an opportunity for healing for those who have been betrayed.
So it's for the betrayed spouse?
It's for the betrayed spouse, and it actually has a very unique approach. It not only does it provide come in a workbook format, but it also comes in with videos, as well as it's going to provide a virtual coaching program and also a care group. So typically when people get a workbook, it doesn't involve other people, but this actually does. And not only does it involve other people, but it's something you can do from the privacy of your own home with your own telephone. And you'll find other people who, like you, are trying to struggle through these things. And I really think you're going to find it to be an amazing blessing.
Where was this when we needed it? I needed it.
When you needed this, I have no earthly idea where this was. Finally doing this. And more than just that, if you get involved in our launch process for the Harboring Hope, we're giving away lots of free products. In fact, tomorrow we're going to release another free product. Just a bonus that goes with the Harboring Hope launch on dealing with intrusive thoughts.
Oh, that's good.
And because a lot of times people have reminders that just kind of drive them crazy. Did you have any reminders after I did everything?
Did I ever have any reminders after
yeah.
you? Yes, absolutely.
Can you remember back that far?
Oh, yes, I can. And I talk to women every day nearly who are dealing with intrusive thoughts. That'll be very good. I think trust, Trust is the biggest question I get, though. How did you ever, you know, people ask me, how did you ever start to trust your husband again? And that's the number one question. And it, one of the number two questions, I would say, it has to be, how do you deal with those thoughts and those pictures that come into your mind of what took place? And so that's, I'm not sure if I've read that one yet, the intrusive thought one. I bet that's good.
Well, actually, it's going to be a video. It's not.
Oh, it's not? Oh, that's great. So it's not a PDF file?
It's not a PDF file. It's actually a video.
You mean people that sign up can get that?
They can get the video, yeah.
Oh, well, if I were you guys out there in Radio Land, I would sign up for the pre-notification list because that would have been very helpful for me.
There'll also be an MP3 file that comes with the video of a radio program we've actually done on reminders that George particularly liked when we did it, and he was talking about all the reminders of, you know, actually George has had reminders in his life too that he's had to deal with. Reminders from me to make sure that, you know, he lets us in the building. So, and we also, coming up, not only do we have all of that, but we have an EMS coming up the 5th, 6th, and 7th of December.
What is EMS, Rick?
Emergency Marital Seminar. You're really just kind of leading me along here. The emergency
marital, job.
It's your job. The emergency marital seminars are actually for couples who are dealing with the crisis of an infidelity, some type of betrayal. And at this point, I think we've already got about 6 or 7 people on the waiting list.
Couples,
that's right. And which means we've only got 3 or 4 openings. So if you're at a point where you'd like to begin to address this before the holidays, because we really would like people to get over the crisis before they get into Christmas, and so we're doing a special December EMS just to help couples resolve some of their issues so they can enjoy the season of Advent. And
it's a Thursday, I'm sorry, it's a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday all day. And it's intensive and it's effective.
It's very effective. Stephanie actually does the cooking, so it's got good food.
Great food.
I don't know about the staff that's running it or anything. but actually, you know, we've been very blessed with the emergency marital seminars because almost 90% of the couples that actually come through that seminar are still together to this day. So over the last 4 years, it's been a real blessing for us to get to be a part of hundreds of lives, and hopefully for the couples that, well, I know for the couples that have gone through, because they've been able to find new life. And God's greatest story, we really believe, is the story of redemption and how he pulls that together. So tonight, though, we're going to be talking about trust. And if you have a question about reminders, please give us a call, area code 512-637-9673. That's area code 512-637-9673. In particular, we'd like people named Amy, Cindy, Dorothy, Kathy, anybody with that particular name to call tonight.
That'd be great. We do. We do really encourage you to call if you have questions, again, about anything to do with infidelity or marriage in general, but tonight particularly about trust.
So, advice for the betrayed spouse, and then we'll talk in the second half of the program tonight. Advice for the unfaithful spouse in terms of how in the world you begin to redevelop trust. So, Stephanie.
Yes?
Do you have any questions about ways to help with trust?
Questions about how long does it take?
Yeah, it's actually a really good question.
I get that a lot.
Yeah, you know, actually, when it comes to rebuilding trust, it's not something, and maybe you can help with this one too, it's not something that typically happens overnight. You certainly know when you've lost it. I don't know that you're always aware of when it fully comes back, even though you wake up one day and you find that maybe it's there again. But there are certain, I think for most people, it takes about 18 to 24 months, that typical length of time that we're always talking about.
That seems so discouraging to me, though, when you say that, honey. 18 to 24 months, especially if someone is looking at a situation where the infidelity was a one-time event and nothing emotional, just physical, and it it seems to be pretty cut and dried. So that 18 to 24 months, I think, is a little on the long side for some situations. I would say that it's really very specific to how long the infidelity lasted, and how what kind of infidelity it was, wouldn't you say?
How long? Yeah. Oh, certainly. And I think the personality types and how secure someone is before it all began, and what mm-hmm. the nature of the relationship mm-hmm. was. And if you had somebody who has made a pretty simple mistake and has generally been incredibly trustworthy, if you've got somebody who's had a problem all along, all of those things would play into it.
Not to mention the fact that the attitude of the unfaithful spouse has
right.
so much to do with it.
So how long do you think it took you before you began to trust me?
Before I began to trust you to a degree right away, because you were very broken. You were very repentant. You were repentant. You were broken. You were just a poor, pitiful man. I think
Thank
about
you.
That. And you were so on your face before the Lord. So that spoke volumes to me. In my level of trust. Also, you came to me with the information. I didn't have to find it out. I didn't have to drag it out of you. I didn't have to walk into a situation. Nobody else came and told me. I didn't find the information. You came and told me. So that helped a lot in rebuilding trust. Also, the fact that you were immediately willing to become accountable to someone. That was huge.
Well, I know you always said, too, that it's not that you necessarily trusted me. You certainly trusted God.
I trusted God with you. You were very intent in your time with the Lord. You spent a lot of time in the Word. You spent a lot of time in Scripture memorizing. And that, all those things, you just did a whole lot of things that showed me that you were rebuilding your relationship with the Lord. So I trusted you with the Lord, or I trusted the Lord with you, rather. So I started trusting you to a low degree from the very to a lesser degree from the very beginning.
Well, and, you know, one of the things that we've got, that we talk about in the report on the Shocking Truth, is about the three pieces you've got to go through. The first thing you've got to be able to do in order to deal with redeveloping trust is you have to figure out, how do you overcome the pain? And, you know, I think there are several things that to deal with the pain of what in the world you're dealing with. You've got to understand a few things as far as being the hurt spouse. The first one is that certainly what has happened here is not your fault. And I think if you still believe somehow that you have something to do with it, I mean, not that we don't all have responsibility, but if you're taking full responsibility for what's occurred, then there's a real tendency to be beating yourself up, which only exacerbates the pain for what's going on in the recovery process.
True. I didn't have to deal with that. I knew that it was you.
Thank you very much. another thing we talk about a lot is it's important to remember that it's really, in the beginning stages, it's about creating a place of safety, not so much a place of trust. That certainly you can replace trust with a whole lot of honest communication. And I know one of the things that we did that was really helpful is just our ability to talk.
Yes.
And to be honest with each other. And that honesty and just a willingness to be open with every aspect of our life really began to create the safety, which was the foundation that I think ultimately trust was built on.
You were very transparent. You answered any question that I asked you. You never refused to give me information that I wanted. One of those things that we did, I remember, that was especially meaningful to me, it was especially healing, was we read a few books, there weren't very many books out about infidelity at that time, especially in the Christian community, but the books that we did read, you would read a chapter and underline things that were important to you, and then I would read that chapter and see what you had underlined, and we would talk about those things. And when we did that, that made me feel very close to you, and it helped me understand a great deal more of what had happened. So that was very useful.
And another concept we talk about in this particular report has a lot to do with the refusal to mistrust. And
did you do all three of those, rebuilding trust?
Nope, I'm still on the first one of overcoming the pain. How in the world do you stop the hurt?
Okay.
Because to me, the problem with choosing not to trust, a lot of times I think people don't ever want to trust again. Because they feel like if they can avoid trusting, then somehow they can protect their hearts. I mean, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice. You know, if I'm going to trust you again, I would be the fool. And so there's no way I'll ever trust you again. But if you continue to mistrust, the problem is it really is at the cost of a meaningful relationship. C.S. Lewis actually talks about that love is an incredible risky venture. And he said the only place you can ever protect your heart from the perturbations of love is actually hell. That somehow you have to keep yourself completely protected and cut yourself off from other people, and you end up being very, very lonely. So certainly we highly recommend that you go ahead and begin to take the risk. Refuse to mistrust for your own sake and for the sake of life and for the sake of love. We highly recommend if someone begins to prove that they're trustworthy that you begin to try to trust again.
Well, I think that's real key, Rick, when you say that if someone proves that they're trustworthy. I think that is a huge piece of learning to trust again, is that the unfaithful partner has to show that they're trustworthy.
Right. Well, that's number three.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I didn't mean to jump ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just saying the first one was overcoming the pain. Maybe I should have said what all three of them were.
Overcoming the pain. Something I was thinking about, when information is shared from the unfaithful partner and that information is painful, there's a tendency that we've seen in our EMS seminars, there's a tendency at times to just kind of slowly leak that information out over a period of weeks. You know, it could be days, could be weeks, could be months that the unfaithful partner takes to get all the information out. Sometimes the hurt partner doesn't even know the right questions. They think they're asking all the right questions, and because the unfaithful partner is holding back information, they don't even realize, the other partner doesn't even realize that they haven't asked the right questions. Does that make sense? So one of the things that's very important, I think, is to make sure that all that information is given out. Because if it's not, let's say that they give some information and then the hurt spouse feels like they've heard everything, they've heard all the stories, and then a few weeks later, either they find out that there was more information or the unfaithful partner comes and says, oh yeah, I forgot to tell you such and such. Every time that you would do that, it was like I kind of had to nearly start over again because the pain would be so sharp and so deep.
Right. And at the same time, if I hadn't done that.
Oh, yeah, you had to do it, and I knew you had to do it. It's one of those, it hurts so bad, but yet I knew it had to take place. But I would just, I would just encourage someone if they're about to tell their partner that they've been unfaithful, get all that information out there, because the sooner that's all out there, the easier I think it is, or the less difficult it is to start working on rebuilding trust. Because I would just kind of have to, I would think, well, okay, I know everything now. Take a deep breath, you know, kind of start to get on that, I guess, on that road to recovery. And then I'd hear something new, and it would just send me reeling again. And so it was, I'd have to start all over. So it just, if you get all that information in the beginning, I think it's helpful.
Right. And the second thing you have to have to begin rebuilding trust, I think, is a belief that your mate's committed, committed back to the relationship. That they've somehow broken off this relationship. I mean, to make a commitment to somebody who has yet to come back towards you, and it feels like has yet to break off a relationship with a fair partner, that's almost impossible. And one of the ways you begin to know that they're committed, I think, is by their level of honesty towards you, certainly, and also by kind of their willingness to be all in, to, and go poker term, sorry about that, probably shouldn't bring it up gambling, but I mean, they're coming toward this thing and rolling the dice and saying, you know, well, I want to go for it. And it's almost like when we get married, we kind of come to this place where it's a free, total, faithful, fruitful love. I mean, we want to give all of ourselves when we come together. Well, after an affair, you certainly would like the unfaithful spouse coming back and saying they really fully want to be in the relationship, that it's kind of no holds barred. I mean, at one level, I say they need to be no holds barred with God, but at the same time, you need to know that they're coming back toward the relationship.
And sometimes I hear people say, well, I just can't do this. I can't keep watching her pain, or I can't keep watching his pain. And I think that's just a cop-out. You know, I think sometimes that's just not wanting to be fully committed to the marriage.
Well, or maybe the understanding, or maybe they falsely believe that the marriage is about happiness or feel good. And reality is, coming back into a relationship where there's devastation and hurt and pain, as we say, love equals suffering. I mean, you're going to have to be willing to deal with the pain.
Well, what was it we heard on the Harboring Hope video tonight where he said, the truth will set you free, but there's hell to pay in the meantime?
Well, you can't use that word on the radio, honey. George says you can use it. No, but it certainly, it's going to make you miserable first.
That's sorry.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
Well, I think my wording was really more accurate. I just think that every time, you know, the truth will set you free, and yes, it does set the unfaithful partner free, but
in the meantime, it's a little
meantime,
painful.
Yeah,
that is right. For sure. And again, if in your own experience of trying to come back together, if you have questions about how to trust, give us a call. Area code 512-637-9673. That's 637-9673. And the third issue, so the first one we covered was you've got to overcome the pain if you're going to be able to trust. You've got to be able to figure out that your mate is committed if you're going to be able to trust. But the last one is you have to kind of determine future risk. And by future risk, it's almost like, what are the probabilities that this could ever happen again? And if you don't have a pretty good idea that y'all have a good shot at least having some freedom from this thing, then it's going to be really difficult to trust again. And one of the things, you know, looking at response patterns that an unfaithful mate has is huge. Are they willing to do whatever it's going to take to make this relationship work?
Because what's a response pattern?
What's a response pattern?
Yeah.
The response patterns are really about how broken they are. Are they sharing information? Are they genuinely grieved?
Some of the
over
things
what's
broken,
happened?
Yeah. Some yeah. of the things we've talked about.
Is it,
I just was trying to get a layman's term of that.
Right. Because if they're not doing those things, then it's really hard to. If they're just being defensive,
yeah,
that would certainly be a response pattern that would be a negative indicator. And in the report, we kind of talk about what are those response patterns you want to look for. Because the last thing you want to do is be, you know, moving back into a relationship with someone that isn't doing basically what it's going to take to keep them safe. Are they willing to get the help they need to get, you know, as they go through this thing? Are they willing to talk to other people? Or do they just want to do their image management and pretend that everything is okay?
I always think about WIT, whatever it takes. Are they willing to do whatever it takes? If it means having conversations till late in the night, early in the morning, answering questions that are painful to answer, whatever it takes for the hurt partner to feel like, you know, they are committed to the marriage, that they are trustworthy, that they are going to do things different.
Well, to me also, are they willing to get into a community of healing? I mean, are they willing to be in a group of other men or women who are dealing with the same issues? Are they willing to talk about it? Or is what they ultimately want to pretend normal? And pretend normal to me is just that place where you want to be able to say that, you know, I'm a good guy, or I'm a, you know, I'll never do this again, which would be pride. And if you're at a place of pride where you think it can't happen again, that's the person that where the future risk of this occurring again is about 100%.
They're most vulnerable.
Yeah, the people who think it could never happen again are really the ones who are most likely to end up doing it again. So you really want to stay at that place of just saying, wow, you know, apart from Jesus, I am sure this is ultimately what I'll do.
Well, what's the scripture? Pride goes before fall and a haughty spirit before destruction. That's so true in a situation like this.
Right. So I want to get to maybe some of the things that the unfaithful spouse then can do to begin to build trust in a relationship. And it's still the same things. I mean, the unfaithful spouse needs to be able to help their mate deal, again, with that immediate pain. And he also needs to be able, or she needs to be able to help them show that they are committed and they're back into this relationship.
Okay, how do you think you helped me deal with the pain?
Oh, I think for one thing with the pain is I gave you a safe forum, I think, to talk. I mean, if you can't process the pain, if what you've got to do is, you know, stick those feelings down and I try to shut you down and don't let you speak about it, then that, I think, will certainly only cause that pain to linger. That's one thing I did.
Yeah, you were very good at that. And you would never, you never said, but you did such and such. You never became defensive.
Another huge place, I think, of dealing with the pain is stop whatever's hurting. In other words, if you're the behaviors that are hurting the other person, like the affair, defensiveness. I mean, if your mate's been telling you the things that are difficult for them, as long as you'll sit there and be, you know, kind enough to stop that stuff, that'll help with pain.
Break off the affair. Stop the pornography. Stop going to, you know, strip bars, those kind of things.
Well, and it comes down to the whole thing of creating safety is about being trustworthy. Mm-hmm. You know, are you going to, and you've got to be consistent with what's going on.
Well, when you talk about consistent, then what do you do if there's a slip up?
Well, when I talk about consistency, I'm not even talking about acting out. I'm talking about be home when you say you're going to be home. You know, that really, that.
Call if you say you're going to call.
Right. You know, I think that another thing you want to do is certainly be able to exhibit empathy, to let the other person know that you understand that you've wounded them and to take responsibility for that, but to care and to grieve and to be able to cry with them over what you have done to them. And
one of the things you did, Rick, that was really important was you were so grieved. Yes, you were very sorry, and you were very grieved about what you had done to me. But more than anything, you were grieved about what you had done to the Lord, what you had done to your relationship with God. And that meant so much to me, because I knew that if you were walking in relationship with the Lord, that there would be a trustworthiness there. And so that was so important to me. That meant a lot. I knew that, you know, it might take us a while to get back in step with each other, but if I could see that your relationship with the Lord was improving, but you were so grieved over what you had done to the Lord that, and I remember you telling me that I had every right to leave you and divorce you, and you could handle that if I decided to do that. You didn't want me to, but you could handle that if I decided to do that. But that you had to be right with the Lord so that you knew that you had to tell me, because that was being obedient. That you said you knew it was more important to be obedient to the Lord than it was to try to protect me. I remember that very vividly, and that meant a lot.
We just had an anonymous caller that was asking, how in the world do you forget about the past?
How do you forget
about
the past?
Does that help with trust, being able to forget about it? Or would that be denial?
How many years later is this for us?
It's only 24.
Only 24. I haven't forgotten about the past, but I don't think about it every day. I don't think about it every I don't think about it every week. When I think about the past now, I think about it just in terms of that you were unfaithful. I don't think about details. I don't think about any pictures in my mind or anything like that. I just think about the fact that there was infidelity and that God did a healing and we have moved on. And probably because we have a ministry in working with infidelity, there is more occasion for me to think of it. If I didn't ever talk to any other people who are walking through it, I might not think of it very often at all. So I don't want to forget that in some ways because it reminds me of what God did in our relationship. So I don't want to forget it. Now, I have forgotten, I haven't forgotten specifics. If I sat and meditated on it, I could think of specifics. But there's no need to do that. And that doesn't come to my mind. I hope that helps answer a little bit. Time takes care. Time is you have time on your side in that it is a wonderful, God uses time to do a lot of healing.
Yeah, for the unfaithful spouse, another thing is back to that commitment. How do you show that you're committed to the relationship? And to me, a lot of that has to do with truthfulness and letting go of secrets, because we always say that infidelity is nothing more than the keeping of secrets. And when you begin to relinquish the secrets, you're really showing, you know, where your loyalties lie. When you hang on to the secrets, what you're really revealing is that your loyalties either lie with whoever you're keeping the secrets for, whether that be for others or yourself, or you're just showing that there's a part of you you're not going to let into this relationship. And so truthfulness to me is, it may sound kind of funny, but it is a number one when it comes to showing that you're committed back to the relationship again.
One of the ways that you did that was you would call me during the day at the beginning. You would call me during the day if something happened that there was a temptation for you. And that went on for a while. And then what would happen was that just when you came home from work, you would talk to me about some temptations that you had. And gradually, there was no longer, you might occasionally let me know that something was hard for you, but there didn't become as much of a need because there were fewer temptations, for one thing. But that, you're right, that transparency was really good. That helped me.
And part three, which is the question of risk, is, are we going to do this again? Could this happen again? Are you going to be safe with me? And I think there has to be almost a calculated, I think we do kind of calculate what is the potential risk of this occurring once again, and how do we know whether or not it would ever occur again? And, one can never know, but you can certainly begin to see some things. I mean, the first thing that I know we talk about at length in the report is about consistency. You know, it's interesting, research shows that if people consistently follow through with something, if I am 90, it's 9 times out of 10. If 9 times out of 10 I follow through with what I say I'm going to do, someone will consider me to be trustworthy. But if I fall below 5 to 1, then ultimately, to that 50% level, I'll be considered untrustworthy. So for that reason, and most guys actually operate at around 53%. So if you're not following through with what you're going to say at least 90% of the time, it's real difficult to begin to redo trust. You've got to keep it up high and just be, as Jesus says, let your yes be yes, follow through with that. And if you say you're going to do the dishes, then for heaven's sake, do the dishes. If you say you're going to keep the kids and you're going to pick up, then pick up. But if you don't follow through, it's going to be a problem.
I liked what you wrote in the PDF about this, where you wrote, you talked about to me, it's just being a man of integrity or a woman of integrity. It's just if you have a job outside the home, then you are on time for that job. You give your employer 100%. You don't steal from your job. You don't cut corners. You don't come home early. If you have committed to keep the kids for your wife, then you show up at the time you told her you'd show up, and you do it, and you don't complain about it. You keep your commitments to your kids. If you tell your kids you're going to be at their football game, then you show up to the football game. Those are all things that you wrote in the report that build trust. And I had never thought about it, but those are great.
Another one is competency. You know, it's interesting. Steph and I had a fight coming in tonight because I have a tendency, and I hope no police are listening to this, but I don't always stop behind the stop sign. And Stephanie keeps reminding me that I need to stop behind the stop sign. And because she's afraid I'm going to get a ticket. And if I get a ticket, she told me that I'm not going to be nearly as upset about it as she's going to be about it. Was that the way you said
well,
that?
I told you, I said, you may think that this is not a big, that it's no big deal to you, but if you got a ticket for it, it would be a huge deal to you, and it would be an even huger deal to me.
Well, and I'm not even sure that it would be that big a deal to me, but it would be because it would be such a big deal to you, it would be a huge deal
to me.
Well,
and it would be $300 or so.
It would not be $300. That was part of our argument. But, you know, it sounds funny, but, you know, that type of competency, even at stop signs, if somebody already perceives you as being untrustworthy and you can't even stop behind a stop sign, that is not one of those things that begins to instill trust.
That's right. You know, it's just a small thing. It's just a very small thing. But it was interesting because I told Rick, I said, I had no idea you had such a rebellious streak in you. But you're right. It's just in those small things, if you can walk in integrity, I think that in seeing those things encouraged me to trust you with bigger things. I think about, you know, the parable that that God talks about when you have one talent that it would trust you with more if you take care of it. And so it just reminded me of some of those things that you did that really, that you showed so much integrity in things.
Except the stop signs.
Right. You just have a real lack of integrity with stop signs, honey.
But I do stop. It's just I don't stop quick enough. So I think we've got Kathy. Hey, Kathy, how you doing?
Hey, Rick. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing fine, thank you.
Stephanie.
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
Good.
How's the weather up in Oregon?
Huh?
How's the weather in Oregon tonight?
Steamy. Are you guys in sunshine?
Well, it was a really sunny day today. It was very nice. I'm sorry.
We had a rainy, windy day.
Well, that's typical for Oregon right now, isn't it?
That is typical for Oregon, yes. Hey, can I make a couple comments?
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's hit the first one you were on trust versus safety.
Right.
Okay, here's something I've come to learn. You know, God gave us this most awesome danger warning. And every one of us carry it. It's called an instinct. And I think most of us who've gone through this have had suspicions, thoughts, feelings, this instinct that arises in us. And for some reason, we've never chosen to trust our own instincts. We've chosen to trust our spouse or friends or other people telling us that we're maybe exaggerating it or, you know, whatever, however that works. And I think if we really want to rebuild trust in our mate or anybody else, we have to really start building the trust in ourselves first. We have to believe that if we can trust our own instincts, then we will feel safe with the person we're with because our instincts will tell us differently. And I've kind of learned that if I trust me and I trust my instincts, and that I'm willing and I'm able to put safety in my husband's side, because if he'll listen to me, he speaks to me, and he hears me, and my instincts are telling me that he's doing all of this, then the trust factor kind of comes back. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you want to add something to that?
Well, it was interesting because there's, I think, the flip side to that. If someone's really controlling, Kathy, that's really an indication of a lack of trust on their part. We don't control because we trust. We control because we don't trust. And sometimes a way to help someone, a hurt spouse, begin to trust again is for the unfaithful mate to actually begin to give trust. Because we tend to trust other people that trust us in return also.
You're saying that they rise to the occasion.
Yeah, exactly. So, in other words, if what you're just saying about if you kind of have a real lack of self-trust or self-confidence in that sense of kind of believing that, you know, God can speak to you and guide you and take you through all of this stuff, and then it's going to be real hard to trust another person. You can't give what you don't have.
Right.
At the same time, for Wayne, for instance, if he were controlling, I would hope that if he began to give you trust and let go of control and just make himself vulnerable to you and trust you, then I think it also makes it much easier for you to also trust him.
Well, do you, Rick, think that trust is more important than safety?
No, I actually say that trust can take a very, very long time to get going. I think safety is your initial, it's the initial thing. And if someone never gets back to trust fully, then I think that safety will do. The sadness for me is I think if someone never trusts again, then it's really hard for them to fully release and to love if there's not some element of trust in giving your heart back to another person.
But if you feel safe with that person, then you want to give them your heart.
You bet.
You want to open up, right?
Right, absolutely.
And then on the future trust, where you were talking about future trust, and this has worked for me. I'm not saying this works for everybody, but I know it's worked for me, that as long as I keep in touch with my faith, knowing that God is protecting me, and if I listen to him through my instincts, that the future trust is just going to be, it's going to be something easier for me to walk into.
Right.
Because for so many years, my instincts kicked in so high, so hard, I mean, so gut-wrenching, but I chose to always ignore those and instead trust the words of somebody else instead of my God-given gift of instinct.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, exactly.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, Kathy, I was just going to say, do you think by instinct, do you think that you... Would you say that that is just the Holy Spirit?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I was thinking, I don't think, for me, I would say the Holy Spirit just giving me discernment about things.
Right.
And, you know, so I think, yeah.
Well, you know, like if you're walking in a dark parking lot and there's somebody behind you, but you kind of get this feeling and the hair kind of rises up behind your neck, you know?
It's that feeling of uneasiness.
This feels kind of dangerous, and you just want to get to your car real fast. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you feel that, but you just ignore it, and then you end up getting into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that instinct is God's gift to us of warning us of danger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when we choose to not trust that instinct that he gives us, and he gives it to us with our mates, gives it to us with our friends, you know, he gives it to us with a lot of things in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We choose what we do with it.
I think
if we learn to reverse that and trust into ourselves and our instincts, and the amazing thing is for 18 years, I had these gut-wrenching instincts that Wayne was being unfaithful to me. But I would listen to his words. I listened to my friends telling me, oh, no, he's not that way. And I would ignore my instincts, but yet they were always there. And so it started to kill away my spirit. It started to kill away my soul. It started to kill away who I was. I think if I would have really trusted me and stood up more and trusted in what God was telling me through me, I think I think, because I don't know, I can't go back and, you know, redo that, but I think I could have spared both Wayne and myself a lot of heartache, well, you know, future heartache, had I had then stood up and said, no, this is going to be looked at and fixed, instead mm-hmm. of just saying, okay, I trust your words, and I'm wrong, and my instincts are just going, you know, they're just stupid, and I'm paranoid, and you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then, where you guys said, I wrote this kind of down a little bit, on the pain
right.
and healing from the pain. And, you know, Stephanie, you said it's always there. You don't never want to forget it.
I didn't want, not the pain. I was talking about
forgetting the incident.
Right.
Right. Because, you know, it's like if you, to me, this is just me talking, but if you fall and you get a wound and you've got a bleeding wound, when that wound heals, it scars. You're always going to see that scar. And you're going to remember the incident that happened that caused that scar. But it's a scar. And it's something that you Rick, you say it 100 times, you accept. I now have a scar on my body. And I accept it, and I move forward with it.
And you know
but
what?
You don't forget the incident.
You know what else that scar does, though? It reminds you that God heals.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's the beauty of it.
Yes.
Is that I don't think about the pain; I think about the healing.
Right. Yeah. Well, when you're in the midst of the pain.
Oh yeah.
In the midst of it, it's pretty hard to forget it.
You know, that's why I have a friend right now that I just keep encouraging her, and I just keep telling her every day, I just say, I just want you to know this pain will fade. It will go away. It will get better. I promise you it will. I talk to women every day that it has, that they have been where you were once. The pain does lessen.
It does. Hey, Rick, I have a question for you
on
that.
Kathy.
Don't you think some betrayed spouses get addicted to anger?
Oh, yeah. I think that it becomes self-protective, and anger is very addictive. It's kind of like at first we eat to live, and then we live to eat. Eventually, anger becomes the thing that sustains us and protects us, and so we really want to hang on to the anger because it makes us feel safe and powerful.
Oh, it does give you a sense of power. That's true.
It does.
And you can control with anger a lot, too.
Yeah. And I do think that a lot of spouses are betrayed because, you know, in some of the stuff I've gone through and researched, too, I see a lot of women who are 4, 5, 6 years down the road from discovery who are still in anger, who are still in the anger. And I asked myself, why would anybody want to live there? It must be it must be almost like an addiction because it keeps you at a distance, number one. You don't have to allow yourself to get close to the other person because
right.
you can stay angry with them. It keeps you in control of that relationship in a way. It's got to be an addictive cycle.
It is, and it's the opposite of trust. I mean, you never, as long as you've got the anger, you never have to trust. And so if you don't have to be trust, you don't have to be vulnerable. But, Kathy, we've got to get going. We're about out of time here.
Ooh, we are. Thank you for calling, Kathy. It was good
Rick,
to visit with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, Kathy.
Can I plug my blog?
Please plug your blog.
Healinghearts with hope.blogspot.com.
Healinghearts with hope.blogspot.com. That would be great. In fact, I think, has Erin put the link on our website yet?
She did. You have to go to resources, go down to links, and I think it's down in the links. Yeah.
That's great. So I highly recommend Kathy's blog if anybody would like to just talk with another hurt spouse who's gone through everything. That'd be great. Thank you, Kathy.
Guys, good night.
Okay.
Good night.
Well, one last thing I wanted to say for the unfaithful spouse that they can do is to be eager and proactive. If you're just looking at future risk, you know, if the unfaithful spouse will sit there and map out their own recovery, take responsibility, show that they're deeply concerned, that they want to stay safe, understanding they're not normal and doing everything they need to do to protect their mate, that goes a long way to helping their spouse determine that it's safe enough to get back in the water with them. So if they'll take responsibility, generally things will be very good. So you certainly want to be proactive. You want to be very motivated to deal with this thing and to take responsibility for it.
How can they be proactive?
Well, I think you get proactive by, you know, you set your own counseling appointments. You can sit there and read your own books. You can get find your own accountability partners.
Good.
You can sit there and ask your mate how they're doing. You can sit there and say, never say, because a lot of times I think if a hurt spouse is sitting there and they keep talking about it, we've always talked on this program how they need to talk about it many times. And if the hurt spouse says, holy smoke, you know, I get it, I'm a jerk, and we quit talking about it, I got the message, you know. Ultimately, all you're saying is that my discomfort is more important than your pain. And you don't want to give that message to your mate. You want to sit there and be proactive and just say, look, you know, you need to talk about this, so let's talk. I know that, you know, you just need help at this point, and, you know, I helped create some of this. Let me do my part. Let me help you as much as I can.
I helped create some of this?
Okay, I created all of this.
Thank you.
Thank you. I knew I was going to get in trouble here at some point, but we are just about out of time. Just a reminder, please go to harboringhope.com. It's harboringhope.com. And sign up for the pre-notification list so you can at least get the shocking truth about trust.
Because how many pages is that, Rick?
That thing is about 37 pages,
yeah,
I believe.
It's a lengthy article.
Yeah,
it's not, very good.
It's not short. It's got a lot of information.
It's so much more than we covered tonight.
Right. And in addition, we'll be giving out how to deal with intrusive thoughts tomorrow. If you ever have painful reminders, we certainly want to give you some very specific techniques of how to deal with those thoughts. And that will be available by video tomorrow evening, I believe. It'll be released. So it depends on when Aaron gets that posted and everything.
Now, if they would like to sign up for our December
5th, EMS.
And it's December 5th, 6th, and 7th.
Right. They can sit there and go to
AffairRecovery.com
and sign up. Or they can also call area code 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299, and we need to sign off here. So, guys, y'all have a great week, and next week, John and Leslie will be here to answer questions about Harboring Hope. God bless.
Thank you for joining us tonight and being a part of the newest addition to our services, A Fair Recovery Radio, radio through the power of God. We'd like to invite you to go to our website, affairrecovery.com, and register for our free newsletter, as well as taking advantage of our free podcast. You will find that these resources are invaluable if you're trying to recover from some form of betrayal. We are here to help. We can also be contacted at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. And remember, there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Good night. God bless.
Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, I am the Lord, the God of all mankind. Is anything too hard for me?